And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standig Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standig. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Wednesday afternoon here in the DMV, and the Commanders have already made a new addition. Zach Ertz. Yes, that Zach Ertz is joining the Commanders, a reunion with Cliff Kingsbury. I'll get into that in a moment, but this is not an emergency Zach Ertz podcast. No, that we're not doing that. What we are doing, though, is talking a lot about the NFL draft. Two conversations I'm going to share with you today. Number one, speaking of reunions, Ted Wynn, our film analyst for The Athletic, he was with me a few weeks ago here to talk about Drake May against Jaden Daniels. Now he's got a film breakdown of the two guys up on The Athletic. So I said, hey, this is what we're all talking about. Come here, give us your thoughts. He's got a decision. He picked a winner between the two of them. We went through the pros, the cons, the highs, the lows, the fixes that are needed, and the fixes that maybe aren't likely. And discuss what that meant for Washington, and also asked him if JJ McCarthy is worthy of being discussed in this situation for Washington. In addition to that, since we talk a lot about quarterbacks, got off of that a little bit. My guy Mike Smeltz came back with me to we went through fake trades, basically. for the way I always look at these things is it's not just like being silly. It's you got to look at all the options, right? And we know that Washington has a lot of picks and they have a lot of needs. And it's not just enough to say, well, they drafted this position. Did they get a difference maker? And if not, what does it cost to get that difference maker? So we discussed some trade up scenarios primarily. And we did that also in part because if all goes well, I may have a Commanders only mock draft up for Thursday. So it was a good sort of tie in to that. So that's what we'll get to here in a moment on the podcast, which of course, you know the drill. You can find on Spotify. Oh, I said Spotify first. Well, whatever. Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Of course, also, make sure if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, and I appreciate everybody that is, but we do have a dollar deal going on right now. Good timing across the site. We've got, obviously, the NFL draft and free agency starting. I'll be all over that next week. College basketball, this is March Madness. The NBA is getting excited. Baseball is gearing up for the season. So much to get into. That's the beauty of The Athletic. It's not just subscribing for the Commanders. It is the whole site. You get it all. We have a lot of great stuff. So hopefully, if you haven't already, check it out and see if it makes sense for you to subscribe. Hopefully, I think you will enjoy it very much. Just click on one of my articles is the key, because then you do that, helps my cause as well. So just click on one of my articles. I had earlier this week, I had my first set of takeaways from the combine, including thoughts on these quarterbacks. Also, Jonathan Allen, Jamin Davis, not switching positions, but switching roles, it appears, and some other good stuff. Today, a new article came up similar to that. I discussed what to do with Sam Howell. It's easy to say, and I'm generally in this camp of, if you're going to draft a quarterback at two, makes sense to bring in a veteran like your Jacoby Brissett types, either as the mentor or maybe the starter of the year, right? While that quarterback learns the ropes. But it's easy to say that you got to go through the exercise and figure out what is the overall scene look like at quarterback? How many teams need them? How many options are there? How many viable options for that role, that spot starter, or you know, maybe even longer than just spot starter, mentor role? How many guys are potentially out there realistically? So I went through all of that and also discussed a bit more about Sam Howell, in addition to Sam Cosmi's role on the offensive line. Also got into some J.J. McCarthy, got into some other draft topics, including running backs and pass rushers as well. So check all that out on The Athletic. You can subscribe for $1 a month for a year. All right. I mentioned Zach Ertz. Let me just hit on this really quickly before we get to the conversations. Zach Ertz is now joining Washington. It's a one-year deal, up to $5 million when you factor in incentives. I don't have the breakdown of what is guaranteed and what the incentives are and all that good stuff. But, you know, so $5 million is not a real number. It's just a, you know, up, you know, it's the best number his side can put out there. So the larger point, as far as we are concerned, is what does Zach Ertz mean for this team? On a basic level, I guess, it's just a swap out for Logan Thomas, who was released last week in what was largely a salary cap move. Now, here you do have the fact that Cliff Kingsbury worked with Ertz for 2 years in Arizona before Kingsbury's firing after the 2022 season. And Ertz had some success. He had about 103 catches in those two seasons, but he has been banged up in his career. He only played 7 games last year, had a quad injury, then was released by Arizona, latched on to Detroit late in the year, but never joined the active roster, never played. Yeah, I think 27 catches last year. Look, I guess obviously, you know, father time ultimately wins out, and, you know, he's not the same Pro Bowl tight end that he was with the Eagles. In 1 year, he had over 100 catches. He was a 3-time Pro Bowler, you know, legit threat. Fantasy football owners certainly know that. At the moment, he's the old head in a room of younger guys. I don't see that I don't see that Zach Ertz is their starter. He'd have to be, you know, he'd have to found the Wayback Machine for make me to believe that. Now, can he be effective in spots? Sure. Right. I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's going to have a rookie quarterback, most likely, at least in some capacity. And you know, that having a viable tight end is great for a young quarterback. It's a nice safety valve at a minimum, gives you a taller target, all those kinds of things. But like I said, I just don't see that he's going to be your starter, which then begs the question, well, who is, right? If for the argument's sake, Zach Ertz is more of the passing threat and John Bates is the blocker, I don't know that that's any better than what they had last year. And I can make the case it's maybe a little bit worse. You know, Logan Thomas had, his knee injury and his injuries really kind of wrecked his 2021 and 2022 seasons, but he was more effective last year and was able to play. But, you know, I no issue with Logan Thomas with them moving on from him. Good locker room guy and all that. But, you know, they had some salary cap savings, saved roughly over $6 million towards the cap, and they needed more anyway. Is Cole Turner going to be the answer? I don't see how we could say that based on what we've seen through 2 years. 13 catches has been, you know, a non-factor for the most part. Armani Rogers, well, look, he was looking pretty promising that 2022 season. He's learning a new position, but then unfortunately he gets the Achilles injury last year. So that, you know, before the year even started. So that took him out. I just don't know that I see this. Like, if you're saying this is the room, Bates, Ertz, Turner, Rogers, unless Rogers is really ready to go and it can make that leap, I think you need more. Now, the problem is the tight end class this year, very thin. I think Dan Brugger has like 4 guys in this top 100 pre-combine, and one of them is Brock Bowers, who's going to go somewhere in the first round. The free agent class, Randy Mueller had, I think, 8 tight ends in his top 100, top 150, and one of them, Dalton Schultz, has now re-signed with the Texans. So I am curious to see what they end up doing here. At a minimum, I would think you draft somebody somewhere on day 3 and, you know, develop him. Hope that's something that you can do. And, you know, I'm not saying I would rule out signing a veteran, of course. But, you know, if they're signing Zach Ertz, then they have some sort of plan for him. He's not just a camp body, I wouldn't think. So that was going to be very interesting to see how this room, how they handle this. But nonetheless, Zach Ertz in, he's essentially the Logan Thomas replacement. Free agency, of course, starts for real on Monday. Because his contract was terminated by Arizona last year, it allows he can sign as a free agent before next week kicks off. So that is the news of the day on that front for Washington. Now, let's get to the conversations here. Quarterback, certainly a big one. You can go read Ted's post on The Athletic. You can find it on the NFL page about his film breakdown of Jaden Daniels and Drake May. But you can also listen right now because we're going to discuss the pros and the cons of these two quarterbacks. And then Mike Smeltz and I with some fun trade, fake trade scenarios involving the Commanders. So let's do that right now here on the Standard Grimoli podcast. All right. We have got a return champion with us. Ted Wynn is back. We had Ted on a few weeks ago when we were starting to talk about the draft, and he gave us thoughts on Drake May and Jaden Daniels. But now he's dug deeper into these guys and has formed an opinion on what he thinks is, I don't know if it's technically who you think is the best for Washington or just who you think is QB2 in this draft, but we'll get to all that in a moment. First off, how are you? How are you? How did you survive the combine? I'm not sure. I think I'm still recovering, to be honest.
I'm doing well. Honestly, you know, I did not live up to expectations at the combine. I didn't compete. I was in bed at like 12 a.m. every day. I was not one of those guys out till 2 a.m. I don't know, something about the jet lag just got me when I was there. I was like so tired every single day that I just, you know, I went out and met with some people, and then I did not go out and drink and hang out. I just went straight to bed after.
Yeah, well, you know, A, that's smart. B, I didn't even, I mean, I'll be honest with my audience, I didn't really even drink that much, or like I didn't like party in that way. I was just up late and I was constantly tired, and I'm getting old. That's really what it comes down to. I don't take care of myself and I'm getting old. So you do all that for consecutive nights, and yeah.
Yeah. You don't have the time zone excuse either. You're in the East Coast, right?
I am, although I'll be honest, like it feels weird that Indianapolis is the East Coast. I'll never get used to that. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I assumed it was Central Time, honestly.
100%. I think parts of Indiana are in Central Time. It's not even, okay. But yeah, not Indianapolis. It's very odd. But we were all there for a variety of reasons, including the chance to, for someone like me, the chance to get to speak to these quarterbacks, these prospects, have them, you know, in front of us for these Q&As, get a chance then, of course, to talk to a lot of people around the league about what they think of these guys. And I went into the week, I don't know, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, kind of think Drake May when I'm looking at a lot of the public lists, they most tend to have Drake May. And I honestly probably came home more confused than when I started, just based on the conversations, because it feels it's a very split opinion across the board. When you started the week, and I don't know when you broke down this tape, but when you started the week or started breaking down the tape again, where were you at that point before you dug in or maybe even talked to people around the league?
Well, I had Drake May as my quarterback too, and he's been in that spot since last season. And I know, you know, before the season, I don't think a lot of people were talking about Jaden Daniels as even a first or second round quarterback because he has such a long way to go as a passer. And then he comes out and breaks out. He counts for 50 touchdowns en route to a Heisman Trophy. And then, you know, he gets that first round buzz, and then we move into the combine, and then all of a sudden things are getting a little out of control. People are saying he might surpass Caleb Williams as the QB1, and he might be quarterback one, which is a little too rich for my blood. But, you know, after watching a film and breaking down most of their games from last season, and I think I watched at least, you know, 6 to 8 games of each quarterback, and really dissecting the film, I came away with the same conclusion that I had, that Drake May was very clearly quarterback two. You know, I left myself open that Jaden Daniels might be, you know, might surpass him just because, you know, there's a lot of big names out there that is kind of preaching, you know, preaching the name of Jaden Daniels, like, you know, Dan Orlowski and some other, you know, guys with pro experience saying that, you know, Jaden Daniels might be the top quarterback in the draft. But, you know, I still think as much improvement as he's made, he still has a ways to go to develop into a quality passer in the league. So I think quarterback three is the right spot for him. And I think there is some separation between him and Drake May.
All right. So I want to go through all this, like I said, to try to help. If nothing else, forget the listeners. No, I'm just kidding. But like, I need to understand like why, because, you know, what's the difference? Because I will just say that the way I've been looking at it is more people tell me or I read that Drake May is the guy. But I do feel like a lot of the times it's because they start with like, well, his size, right? He's got the prototypical pocket passer size, 6'3", 6'4", 220 odd pounds. He looks the part where Jaden Daniels, we're going to talk a lot about his weight over the next few weeks and where it is and where I think people are waiting to see that LSU pro day and seeing what his number is. He didn't weigh in at the combine. But there seems to be more passion on the Daniels side when I talk to people. You mentioned some were saying he could be even better than Caleb Williams. Okay, we can maybe, like you said, slow that roll, but just the fact that there's that level of passion, I think, is interesting because I haven't felt that as much on the Drake May side, which isn't to say that's accurate in terms of better or worse, but it is what I was noticing. But you're studying the tape. So I guess, tell me this, like, what's your process for doing this? Like, because obviously you're an NFL guy, so not that you're coming in completely cold, but you have to ramp up a bit. What's your process for actually doing the homework on these prospects?
Yeah, so I just start just watching the film. I mean, I'll take a rough look at the numbers, but, you know, I'm not too into just raw statistics as far as projecting quarterbacks, but to give you a little bit of idea of what's going on. I mean, you can see why Drake May's stock has dropped a bit because his numbers has dropped significantly from last season to this season. But when you watch the film, I think it's pretty clearly the talent around him has dropped, you know, questionable scheme decisions, things like that. And you know, it's a complete opposite of a guy like Jaden Daniels, who played with two receivers that could, you know, might have top 15 type of grades and a very good offensive line, a very good play caller. So I think when you watch the film, the difficult part is, especially with quarterbacks, is trying to separate what this quarterback is doing from the team around him and the environment around him. Because I think, you know, we say quarterback wins aren't a stat. I think a lot of the football nerds say that, but I mean, quarterbacks do influence wins, but I think people kind of overestimate that, their influence over wins. I mean, the team around them matters, protection matters, receivers matter. So I think when I go through that process, I'm really just trying to look at the quarterback's skill sets, their traits, what they're trying to do on film, and the reasons why they're doing it and how it projects to the next level.
Yeah, I always view it like in general in sports when we have these debates of who's best and all that. You know, it's like, just to use the NFL, it's like looking at like Josh Allen. Clearly he's pretty good, but if we're just going to focus on wins, well, then he's not getting it done in the postseason because they keep losing to the Chiefs. But on the other hand, he in those games plays well. It's not as if he's struggling in the victory, so I don't put it on him. And to me, that's how I view the, not so much the wins and losses, but do you step up? I'm an NBA guy. I always discount certain players like Chris Webber, who somewhere around here I have a picture of me, of a young me and him when he was on the Bullets, but because he always seemed to like fade in the final 5 minutes of a game. Peyton Manning, to be honest, the reason I always put Brady over him was because he kind of faded in the postseason relative to his standard in the season. So yeah, it's to me always like, who's going to give me the best shot at being a sustained good effort when the, you know, throughout. And obviously we don't know for sure with these guys until they face NFL teams and bigger moments. I guess maybe that was some of the knock on Drake May last year, that he came up a bit short in some of North Carolina's bigger games. But let's break down, let's get to the tape stuff that you worked on. A dealer's choice. Do you want to start with Daniels or May? And I'm just curious to start, what are some of the positive traits you found with whichever guy you want to start with?
Yeah, let's start with Daniels. And I think with Jaden Daniels, obviously the first thing that stands out is he's an elite athlete. Like as soon as he gets into the league, he's going to be, as far as a runner, in the realm of Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields, and those guys. I mean, this guy is just dusting and running away from SEC defenders that you're going to see play on Sundays. He's so smooth, gliding vertically or horizontally. I mean, he's a big play threat every time he takes off with the ball. And he's extremely accurate on all three levels. He hits his receivers in stride. You know, he throws a nice deep ball with touch. He can make all those type of throws and hit all levels of the field with pretty good accuracy. So just as far as athleticism and accuracy, that gives him a very strong floor to start with. I mean, you know, as soon as he gets in the league, you're going to at least have a very good option attack. And you're going to have a point and shoot quarterback who's going to be able to hit those schemed up type of throws.
The highlights are fun, right? I mean, like LSU was, you know, because they're in the SEC, they're on TV a lot, but they weren't quite on the, you know, national title track. And I know for me, when I would watch games and had limited time because of, you know, the day job, they weren't always on my radar. But every week, the highlights were pretty mm-hmm. exceptional. One of my buddies who hosts local radio here in town just kept touting Daniels all year. To this minute, he still says he's the guy for Washington and all that stuff. And also, I think just the fact that it came from nowhere, you know, his career high before last season, 17 touchdown passes, he throws for 40. Like, that's not just an incremental increase. That's preposterous. You know, that's almost like, for the older generation, that's, you know, Bob Beeman-esque. To break a mark by that much. The running stuff is obvious. I freak out whenever I watch him get hit. I assume you've seen like the compilations of his taking big hits. That stuff absolutely freaks me out. But we can get to that in a second. But in terms of the passing, I always think, of course, this is what is so good about tape, getting to see the whole field, what it is in theory that the quarterback is looking at. Where did you see sort of growth improvement, or what stood out to you? What are the types of throws that you think he can maybe make in the NFL level?
Yeah, he doesn't have the strongest arm. He doesn't have elite arm talent, but he has a very live arm. He has a good arm. And again, he can make throws on all three levels. And I think he made a concerted effort to be more patient in the pocket and get through his reads. You know, he get to 1, 2, and 3 in a progression. It's inconsistent at times because, you know, there are times when he does just take off too early. And when I say too early, I mean as far as what you want to see from a pro quarterback. But in college, I mean, why wouldn't you take off if you're Jaden Daniels? Because, you know, it was such a weapon for the LSU offense, and he was such a threat on the ground. I mean, they were the number one scoring offense in the country. So I could see why he took off, and he, you know, he's actually number one in scrambling from clean pockets since at least 2015, Marcus Mariota, and it's by a wide margin too. So he took off a lot. He relied on his legs, but he did make a concerted effort. And there are examples of him getting to his third read, getting to that backside dig, and going through his progressions. So there is there are signs that he is getting better, and there's evidence that he can do it. It's just he didn't do it often enough, in my opinion. And there's still a ways to go as far as that department.
Yeah, interesting. Can you tell, I don't even know, just over your years of doing this, are there things when you try to figure out a quarterback's, how it's going to translate to the NFL, that you catch that sort of certain traits that carry over and other ones that don't? And if so, how does that apply here?
Yeah, I think, you know, our own Nate Tice made this point with Jaden Daniels on his scouting report. And I quoted his scouting report on my article. He talked about how quarterbacks attack the middle of the field. And he listed a couple examples, like guys like Justin Fields or Jalen Hurts didn't attack the middle of the field that often. And to translate into the pros. And with Jaden Daniels, we see the same thing. He did not attack the middle of the field that often. He had one of the lowest career attempts percentage to the middle of the field of past 10 yards and over since 2015. I think he's sixth lowest on that list. So, you know, when you have a quarterback that doesn't attack the middle of the field often, that often translates to the pros. And that's a problem in the NFL. I mean, you could still obviously have a very good offense. I mean, you look at the Eagles offense, Russell Wilson did the same thing for years, and Seattle is very good on offense too, but it is a weakness that you have to consider. So he likes throwing outside, and when those inside throws get clogged up, he likes to take off. So I think that's something you have to consider with Jaden Daniels. Can he improve in that area? But even if he doesn't really improve in that area, he could still be the centerpiece of a strong offense, but it has to be catered to him. And obviously, you know, you always want to cater your offense to your quarterback, but you have to know that that's a weakness.
Cliff Kingsbury has told us recently to not call his offense the air raid offense, which is, you know, the basis for what he was doing in college and, you know, what he played as well. That said, I mean, you know, we can call it whatever we want, but, you know, based on what we saw in Arizona, it's going to be, you know, an up-tempo situation. He had Kyler Murray, who, you know, was a lot shorter than Daniels, but it has that obviously heightened mobility. It feels like Daniels, like, if we're just going to draw up the type of quarterback for a Kingsbury system, like that, he certainly would fit that bill. You see any, it seems like a good marriage, I would say.
No, completely. I think the criticism of Kingsbury's offense with the Cardinals was it relied on too much Kyler Murray playmaking. And if you have Jaden Daniels, he can playmake. You're going to, you know, be in a wide open offense with four receivers out. You're going to be in a ton of spread formations. You know, I know he runs the ball more than the people think he runs the ball, but you're going to be in a ton of spread formations. You're going to use a ton of tempo, and you're going to have a bunch of tired defenses out there. And that opens up the avenue for a running quarterback like Daniel. So I think he does fit the mold of what Kingsbury wants to do.
All right. Now, the elephant in the room is the dude is skinnier than skinny. And we just went through this here last year with Emmanuel Forbes, you know, setting new records essentially for how light for a cornerback to be picked that high. Daniels, as I said, didn't weigh in at the combine. He said it was because he wanted to have a chance for people to come to his LSU pro day and see his other teammates. I don't know. I feel confident that scouts were going to go to the LSU pro day anyway, but okay. Obviously that's going to be a concern and we can't say what he will or won't weigh, but is there a number where if he comes in at, like, he was listed at 210, I think I've heard 205 is a number historically that is like a good barometer for starting quarterbacks. Is there a number for you that would be like, oh boy, I got to rethink all this, or does that not make as much of a difference as you're looking at it?
I mean, I think, you know, he's going to be light, you know? So I think if he's, I mean, you would want him to be above two, you know, in a perfect world, you want him to be around at 215 range. But I mean, if it's not below 205, then we know he's going to be light. We know he's going to have to gain weight throughout his career. So to me, that's just part of the evaluation with Daniels, is he's a light. But I think he has to frame to add on weight. I mean, it's not like a Bryce Young type situation where, like, if he adds on a bunch of weight, it's going to be very difficult for him to maintain his movement skills and that sort of deal. He has that long body where he can add on weight easily and still be able to you know, play like himself. So that's not a huge concern for me. I mean, I think it's a concern early on in his career, but I really do think that he could easily add on some pounds just throughout the years. And, you know, in this draft process, it's going to be kind of that unnatural, like, body weight, water weight type of deal. So it's not a huge deal for me. And if it's like below 208, maybe I'm a little concerned, but I think he's going to get around 215, 220, like, in a few years, in my opinion.
All right. And, you know, on the flip side, I mentioned earlier, we're talking about the weight, which is, of course, leads to the question of potentially, can you physically hold up in the league? Mentioned before taking hits. Seriously, like, if you said to somebody, put together a compilation of the worst hits a quarterback took, you might just be able to go to all the Jaden Daniels ones, because they're really, even when we see guys get hit, like, that's the thing about, like, a Russell Wilson or Lamar Jackson. They run, but they don't get hit. Or Russell, you know, younger Russell Wilson, at least. He's getting hit. Somebody joked to me that, like, if you're at his pro day or you bring him in for his one-on-one interview, just have him show that he can slide. Forget the throws. Can you get down when you have to? That to me is the concern. But you tell me, for you, just ultimately, I guess, what's your biggest worry with Daniels? If it's not that, is there something else that gives you some hesitancy?
Yeah, I think as far as weight, you want a guy that could be able to rip away from arm tackles in a pocket and get through some of that, you know, those tighter spaces in the pocket. You don't want a guy that you can just pull down And I don't think we see that from Daniels. I think, you know, he does rip away from some of those arm tackles. We'll see if he can do that in the pros. But yeah, he needs to learn how to slide. And I mean, I think you could learn how to slide and you could learn how to not try to get those few extra yards. But there's also like Lamar Jackson. I feel like he has a sixth sense of where that hit's going to come or when it's going to come. And he just gets down right at the perfect time. And maybe that's not as learnable and maybe that's not as teachable, but he could definitely, you know, when you see a hit coming head on to you, just take this slide. He could do that. You could learn how to do that. But as far as, you know, just that sixth sense that Lamar Jackson or maybe a Kyler Murray has, as far as that, where that hit's coming from, I don't know if he could learn that. And that's going to be a little bit more dangerous. But as far as just, you know, you see that hit coming, just make the right decision, fall down.
I always find it fascinating. What are the things that athletes cannot change? What are the instincts that they just have? I see, you know, I talk about this all the time with NBA. Some guys just have no feel for the passing game. They get the ball and they just want to drive or shoot. They have no feel for how everything else is going. And I just don't think you can shake some of these things. And it's not the exact same comparison, perhaps, but Sam Howell last year comes into the league with a very high sack percentage, how often he is in the pocket and gets hit. And that is viewed as one of those stats that does replicate negatively. And sure enough, of course, last year, Washington gets sacked 65 times. Wasn't all him, but it wasn't not him. So it is interesting to see what certain flaws, as it were, guys bring in, and are those the ones you think can be changed or not. Let's go to the other guy in the article you wrote that's up on The Athletic. Let's go to Drake May. Since we were just discussing the concerns, I guess, with Daniels, let's just start there. May did not have as good as last season as he had in 2022. And, you know, there was a new offensive coordinator. He lost some pieces around him, etc. Did you see a step back at all? Statistically, yes. But playing-wise, did you see any kind of step back for him? And if so, what was it?
I think it just was more of the sloppiness as far as his footwork and some of the decision-making, but I think he was also pressing at the same time. You know, he saw a ton of pressure. His offensive line wasn't very good. The protection plan wasn't very good. And he did a good job of drifting and finding those open spaces and moving in a pocket. But, you know, at some point it just becomes too much when you're doing it every single play. And I think it led to just some sloppy footwork. You know, he had to throw off his back foot at times and he was pressing. And, you know, he actually did not make as many bad decisions as I thought he was going to make before getting into the film. He was pretty low in PFF's turnover worthy play rate. So that I found that pretty surprising. But I think it was just kind of just a sloppy footwork and sloppy decision-making that kind of, you know, wore on through as the season progressed.
Yeah, the footwork is what I hear the most about when people have questions about him. It's okay. People say that footwork needs to be cleaned up. Easy? Not easy. I mean, obviously, everything requires work. But as we're saying before, Sam Howell maybe is going to have a difficult time ever adjusting that sack rate because it's in his head as to like how long he's holding onto the ball to and what he needs to see before he throws. Footwork, how challenging is that of a flaw, air quotes I'm saying, to fix?
As far as quarterback flaws go, and it's not easy, it's going to take work, but it's pretty, you know, like we've seen this happen a lot where a quarterback gets criticized for his footwork, goes to the league, gets pro coaching, and it's all of a sudden it's a lot better. We've seen it with Patrick Mahomes, we've seen it with, you know, Josh Allen. It's just, you know, you're coordinating your feet with the route. You're just working on being more disciplined with your footwork. You know, we've seen quarterbacks make improvements in their footwork during the season, you know, like in the beginning of the season, maybe, you know, you get some press conferences where you talk about it being a little sloppy. They work on it for a couple of weeks. All of a sudden it's pretty good later on the season. And I'm not saying it's 100% hit rate where, you know, a quarterback has sloppy footwork and then he gets to the league and it's better, but it's one of the things that we've seen that can get worked on as you become a pro. So it's not a big concern for me with Drake May. I think he's going to easily be able to clean that up when he gets to the league.
Let's get to the good stuff. He's got the size. As we said, he's the biggest quarterback, height and weight, at least of the main ones that we're talking about. And, you know, it was not that long ago, at least the start of last college season, that people were saying, hey, he may rival Caleb Williams for being the number one pick. So what's the positives for you that give you belief that he's going to be a guy to reckon with in this league?
Yeah, like you mentioned, he has the prototypical size, and he's, you know, he's not Jane Daniels on a, as a runner, but he's pretty dangerous as a runner too. Like, I don't know what he'd run in a 40, maybe like a 4.5, but he could get away from tackles. He's a threat on the ground, and if you really wanted to use him in an option attack, he's athletic enough to give you a viable option runner, but he's not going to do that. He's just going to be a very dangerous scrambler in the league. But he has extremely good arm talent. I don't know if I would put him quite in that tier with, you know, the Herberts, Josh Allen's of the world, but he's maybe a tier below that. Very strong arm talent. Can make all the throws. He can make crazy throws off it, his back foot. You know, he can make all these throws on a run. He can make throws running across from his body. But what I love most about his film is he's a big game hunter. He's looking for those opportunities downfield. He's able to anticipate those opportunities breaking open. He could use his eyes to manipulate defenses. I think he's very creative as a passer. And that's one of my favorite traits to look for in quarterbacks. He has that creativity in the pocket and outside the pocket. So all those traits are the traits that we see in those quarterbacks in the modern day that really reached that pinnacle. You know, like you see a guy like CJ Stroud, because of his creativity in the pocket, excel in the league in his first year. I'm not saying he's going to be that, but he shares some of that creativity and ability to manipulate defenses from that pocket with Stroud.
It's interesting. It really is interesting to try to get a feel for what's going to happen here. Ultimately, and you've got a lot of detail in the story. So, you know, regardless of we're going to spoil it officially, who he likes best, but there's a lot of details as to why, what makes both of these guys interesting and where are some of the concerns to be had for sure. But ultimately you like Drake May. Is that as much for just the prospect or for Washington? And Washington's kind of a blank slate still. We don't quite know what's going to happen on a variety of fronts, but is it a better, do you just like him better as a prospect, or do you just think he's also just a better fit for what we think of Washington?
I think he's just clearly a better prospect than Daniels for me. And that's not a knock on Daniels at all. I mean, I think Daniels is clearly a first round quarterback, top 15 type of pick, but I just really like Drake May as a prospect. And I think he's maybe not a whole tier over Daniels, but I think he's clearly a better prospect in my opinion. I think Daniels has a further way to go as far as being a pocket passer that can anticipate and make those throws over the middle. You know, he doesn't have the strongest arm, so there's not like a huge margin of error for Daniels. So I think there's a bit of a process there that is going to take place over the next few years. I think Drake May is just pretty close to being a very good quarterback, and he might take a year to really clean up his footwork. And he's going to have a year where he kind of experiments what kind of throws he get away with. You know, he might throw a lot of turnovers in his first season, but I think it's not just because he's throwing the ball up. It's just because he's experimenting to see, can I get away with this throw here against this defense? And as he kind of gets that input and he gets better and better at reading defenses and getting more ingrained in offense, you know, I think in year two, he's going to be ready to kind of take off and be a very good quarterback in the league.
You've been already very generous with your time, especially just to come back again. but I just, I don't know if you've, have you looked at the other quarterbacks? Cause some people think JJ McCarthy is worthy of discussion here in this range. And then obviously Michael Penix and Bo Nix, not for top for Washington too, but you know, if there's a trade down for Washington, then who, you know, maybe have you looked at any of them? Do any of them, does McCarthy kind of get in this range for you, or do the other guys you have any interest in at all?
I think JJ McCarthy is an interesting quarterback. I had more of a second round, late first grade on him. But to me, JJ McCarthy is the wild card. I mean, when you watch him, he has all the traits you look for. Very, very good arm. He could make, you know, he's accurate on all three levels, but you know, when he's throwing left, he get a little more inaccurate, but I feel like that could be fixed again with some better footwork and a little, cleaning up of his technique. So I don't think that's a huge deal. He could run, he could create, and he's creative outside structure as well. I think Michigan not passing the ball as much had more to do with just the fact they didn't trust their offensive line to pass block. They were a very good run blocking unit, but they weren't very good at pass blocking. The thing is, we don't know exactly what JJ McCarthy is yet, and that makes him very intriguing. And he's a wild card to me. I think he's too much of a wild card to really consider him into, you know, as part of that top three quarterback. I would put him very clearly as quarterback four. I would be more comfortable drafting him late in the first round, second round, but I know that's not going to happen, you know, with the way the league is trending and the thirst for quarterbacks. He's probably going to end up in a top 15. But I don't think he should be a consideration with the top three guys.
Fair enough. All right. You can follow Ted on Twitter at FB_film analysis. Do you have anything else coming up that we, all of us draft nerds or maybe you got free agency as well, something that we should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, I'll work on the Michael Penix scouting reports and maybe talk about the Ryan Grubb offense a little bit. So watch out for that in the next few weeks.
Penix is fascinating. In any other year where Washington wasn't picking two, we'd be discussing him and Nick's for sure. But so I am curious to see where those guys land and where Penix lands for you. My guy, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming back, for the time, and for the insight. And I'm going to still keep banging my head against the wall. I don't know what to do here, but I got to think of something here because, you know, it sucks that I'm going to do a mock draft at some point and I can't even figure out the second pick. But
I'm sure you'll get it.
Yeah. We'll see. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. All right. Look, when I get the bat signal from my next guest, I don't really hesitate, especially he just has to say something like, "Hey, I got crazy trade ideas." And I'm like, all right, I'm in. So here to for another round of the Smeltz test. Perfect. Here's our guy, Mike Smeltz, to help me talk about the Commanders. We're going to end up mentioning the quarterbacks, but the goal here is to view this broadly. Yes. About Washington's opportunities that may exist.
Because sorry, I'm just stumbling there. This team needs so much, Ben. Like, if you go down the chart, what are the last two positions that they really don't need? It's defensive tackle and, like, maybe running back. But even then, you would go into the draft, not to spoil. I'm not going to say, but you have a good article coming out. Maybe this will be in tandem of that. They could use running back. They could use – I rank the draft needs going into this thing just for fun. Quarterback, offensive tackle, D end, interior O line, cornerback, tight end, safety, linebacker, and all of those are legitimate needs, right? Like, particularly quarterback. So, like, what I wanted to focus on was not just the quarterback, and that is incredibly important. But, like, we also, this draft, if you're a Commanders fan like myself, this draft needs to be about building out the offensive line, setting the foundation, Ben. And it can't just be about, hey, we're going to draft Drake May or Jane Daniels, and then the rest of the draft, like, is a non-factor. The rest of the draft is actually the most interesting part because it's going to be one of those two quarterbacks, and we don't know if they're going to be any good. But these other players are really going to be the foundation for whether this team is like the 49ers, where they're able to handle a lot of different quarterbacks, or if they are like what the Washington Redskins were under RG3, which is they get one good quarterback, and then they have Kirk Cousins, and then the team crumbles around as Kirk Cousins leaves Washington. So that's my long preamble on that front.
Look, Adam Peters agrees. He was, when we were at the combine, and he was asked, you know, a litany of questions about quarterbacks, and somebody asked something broader, and he said, "Hey, I just want to say I appreciate the non-quarterback question because we're here for everything." And that is 100% the point. I mean, it's just obviously, you know, so much starts at two. That's why, like, for me, like, even just like trading down, I'm intrigued. What is going? Is there? Do you see a thumb on the screen?
Yeah. So, like, for the audience, we're doing this over Zoom, and Zoom does this really annoying thing. And if anyone's been in business, they understand it. If you do a thumbs up, like, as a human, it will do it on the screen. Also, Sometimes balloons will explode.
The balloons exploding happened to me once. I think it's I don't have a Mac. Do you have a Mac?
Yes.
I think it's a Mac thing. Yes. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. It was like, I saw the thought. I was like, wait, does Mike give me a signal? Did I say something smart? What is going on here?
There's been a trade, Ben. That was our signal that they've traded the number two overall pick.
Wow. That would be a crazy way to find
number one.
That'd be a wacky way to find that out. All right. So, yeah. So, no, but agreed. I mean, like, when you said, like, before, all the positions that they need. Look, you're right. Defensive tackle would be the one, if assuming that they keep John Allen and Daron Payne, that they're good. But even a receiver, like, if I wanted to be generous, I could say between McLaurin, Dotson, and De'Ami Brown, okay? But that's being generous because De'Ami Brown has obviously been inconsistent. And, you know, one way or for whatever the reason, Jahan Dotson was off last year. And none of those guys offer you height. So, yeah, they literally need everything. And that's why, you know, it's funny also, I was looking at how many picks teams had. Like, you know, we're like, oh, they have 9 picks. That's pretty good. Some of these teams have double. I mean, some teams have like double-digit picks. Like the Niners have an insane amount of picks. I think the Bills are another team. And obviously there are a couple that have, you know, smaller, but like it is, they have a lot of work to do. And it isn't just about the quarterback. In fact, you can make the argument taking the quarterback at 2 and then not sufficiently addressing the other needs, particularly on offense, will only limit what happens with that player they pick at 2, at least initially. So yeah, they've got a ton of holes. I got to figure out how to get this done. And you're going to guide us through some ideas as to what you think can happen here. I don't know what these ideas are. I'm a little nervous for, humanity. No,
they're all good. They're all normal, nervous for nothing crazy. So the first idea, they trade for number 3 and they get Jaden Daniels and Drake May and they let them battle it out. No, that's not a real idea, but I have heard that idea before of like, taking a quarter, I think Chuck Klosterman was on Bill Simmons's pod and he was like, you should take a quarterback, you know, the 3rd and 4th and 5th round and just see who's the best, which is honestly for Redskins fans now, Commanders fans, we saw what it was like when RG3 was drafted with Kirk Cousins, what that did.
Well, but
partly, you know, to RG3's mindset.
Without being a spoiler, I will just say, keep an eye out. If I don't, my picks are not in for this Commanders only mock, but one of the scenarios does involve exactly what you're describing. We'll see what happens. I'm not there yet.
All right, the first real one.
By the way, I will just say, yes, every year I would draft a quarterback somewhere on day 3. Now, maybe I wouldn't do it. You know, I say every year. I mean, if they say I had Daniels and Sam Howell, maybe I wouldn't bother. But like in general, I would take that dart because it is the most important position. You got to have depth, if nothing else. But anyway, take us.
Yeah, and it's that's an old Eagles. Under Andy Reid, Eagles now, Packers under Mike Holmgren thing. And those dart throws get you like Matt Hasselbeck. It gets you actually Jalen Hurts. Cause like that was a Jalen Hurts pick, was like a completely unexpected early dart throw. I think it was still 2nd round. So it's more than a dart throw, but I agree. Like quarterback, just take one every draft, do the best you can to find the best guy every year. Could be a backup or could be someone like Hasselbeck, who they got, I think they got draft capital for on some point. Okay, here's the first one. Okay, and I think this first scenario is probably the least likely, but it is the most intriguing. This is the Will Anderson. Okay, so last year the Texans took CJ Stroud and then traded the 12th overall pick, the 33rd overall pick in last year's draft, plus a 1st for this year and a 3rd this year for the number 3 overall pick to take Will Anderson, the defensive end out of Alabama, who I think he was defensive rookie of the year, right? Will Anderson.
That's right.
Okay. So this idea is like, okay, let's say the Commanders through this process, they're obviously, even though like Adam Peters keeps talking about, we're not really thinking about quarterback yet. It's not really what, you know, it's so new. We're all trying to get, that's my Adam Peters impression. they are thinking about quarterback. I guarantee Josh Harris is texting Adam Peters and Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn saying, what do you guys think? Like constantly. I'm sure that's the case. Mark Ein is probably also texting that constantly as well. I don't think Magic Johnson is because he tweets everything he thinks. But I think the Will Anderson move for the Commanders is, do the Commanders take the quarterback number 2? Everything here is assuming the quarterback is taken at number 2. I don't care who it is. I'm just removing that out of the equation. Do they go up and trade a bunch of draft capital to get either one of the top 3 wide receivers or one of the top 2 or 3 tackles? If in their evaluation, they think that person is a game changer, Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers, Joe Alt, Olufoshinu, who's from Gonzaga, JC Latham, or I think it's Talese Fuaga, Do they do that? Now, Ben, I think it's probably the least likely, again, of all these trade scenarios you're going to hear, because it seems like this team would rather accumulate like draft assets as opposed to like giving it a ton to like pair Drake May with Marvin Harrison. But if you really want your rookie quarterback back to succeed very like early on, pairing him up with Marvin Harrison plus Terry McLaurin does like solve some issue. So, it's like a little Joe Burrow-y. I'll say that.
So did you look at the trade chart for these various concoctions?
So I came up with what I based it off of previous recent trades. So the Texans traded their first round. They traded number 12 last year and number 33 plus a first and a third to get number 3 overall last year. So this year it could be something like the Commanders set 2 second-round picks, a third round pick, probably the early third round pick, plus a first and probably a second next year to go to number 4 overall. That's a ton of draft capital. But what you're getting is you're getting Marvin Harrison Jr. or Joe Alt. Though I don't think they're going to go. This is not where you would trade capital to get tackles. You would do this if you think Marvin Harrison Jr. is Jordan Jefferson, right? And you think you're going to be able to pair a rookie quarterback,
Justin Jefferson,
on a cheap salary with a rookie wide receiver whose salaries for wide receivers are increasing at an astronomical rate, pairing those two together for their careers to be together and to have like an amazing connection early on. That's the thinking of why you may do this. Is that terrible, Ben? You could say yes.
It's borderline terrible only because from the standpoint of it's just too far to move. Like, I just don't know. Like, right. I mean, ultimately here, it isn't just that they need like starters. They just need bodies, right? They have over 20 free agents. You know, almost, I did this the other day. I'm blanking on what the exact breakdown was, but it's almost like half of last year's starters, including special teams, are those spots are like open, right? So like they just need a lot of stuff. Like, you know, linebacker room, they have one linebacker right now, essentially, in Jamin Davis. That's like it. So they need a lot of stuff. I just don't know. I just don't see Peters off the bat making a deal where he's giving up all of these picks. And, you know, to be fair, you know, if recency bias, Carolina, it's not the trade you're talking about, but Carolina traded a whole bunch of stuff to get a rookie quarterback. And then the next year they were the worst team in the league. And now the Bears have their first round pick. So hypothetically with Commanders having a rookie quarterback already, you know, could be in position to be a really bad team again next year. And therefore I just think that would be a tough sell. You know, you'd have to be almost talking about like, if Marvin Harrison isn't Jerry Rice, then like it becomes like, you know, he can't just be good. He's got to be the best. I just think they're just too far down. I don't have an issue moving into the first. I just wonder if that's a little too far away.
Okay, good that you don't have an issue, because this is the Elijah Vera Tucker. Okay, if you remember Elijah Vera Tucker, I think it was the 2021 draft. The Jets had something like 3 first round picks or 2 first round picks that draft. They moved up from 23 to 14 to get guard Elijah Vera Tucker, who was someone who I think the Commanders at the time were mocked.
He was the one I was mocking him to Washington. And I will say that was my own thought, but I asked around at the time and people were like, yeah, that's a reasonable thought.
Who was the pick? Jamin?
That was the Jamin pick, right? Darisaw was on the board.
What a great draft pick, Jamin Davis.
Well,
I'm sorry, Ben. I agree. He should be rushing the passer. I don't know why the previous coaching staff didn't do that with him. If you look at his measurables, he's like a pass rusher. He's Dallas Turner.
Mention, and Mike's referencing part of the story I had up the other day about takeaways from the combine, in which, you know, it sounds like the Commanders are looking at ways to get Jamin Davis focused more on rushing the passer than just playing more traditional linebacker. And like every game, the other team was like running a wheel route on him, whether it was completed or not. They were like open, like every time he gave up the most yards per reception as any linebacker in the league. And also like his football instincts are just not great, but what he is good is he's incredibly athletic. Just say here, go, the ball is there. Go that way. But that sounds like there may be more chance to do that this year.
I made a decent amount of money on over-under yard prop bets whenever a team played the Commanders for like the receiving running back and a tight end.
Right.
Because they constantly got gashed. And I mean, let's not go back to the former coaching staff, but like why Jamin Davis was ever covering any human past 2 yards from the line of scrimmage is insane. Okay. So again, Elijah Vera Tucker, Jets move up from 23 to 14. They give up the 23 overall pick, 2 third round picks, and they get 14 overall and a 4th round pick. So they lose 1 pick overall in aggregate, but they move up further in the 1st round pick. So let's imagine the scenario. The reason why I like this, I think I like this the most out of the scenarios.
Say this one again. What's the breakdown?
So the breakdown is Jets move from 23 to 14.
Oh, no, okay? You're talking about what the Jets actually did.
Yeah. Jets have gotcha. So in the Commander scenario, let's assume they move up to like 18 or something, not 14 because 14 is a little further. But anyways, they move up. They give up their 2nd round pick this year, a 3rd round pick this year, and probably an extra 5th or something to move up to late mid 1st round. And they also get like a 6th round pick. I don't know. But basically, they're giving up a 2, a 3, and a 4 to move up into the 1st round this year. They're not giving up future picks. Okay. Here's who the players they could possibly get by doing this. And this is why I think this is exciting. The Elijah Vera Tucker. Okay. In that range, Dallas Turner, Jared Verse. There is a massive drop-off in DN talent, I think, going to be after the 1st round. Dallas Turner is a super freaky athlete who's extremely productive at Alabama. Jared Verse, big, strong, powerful rusher, very productive, Florida State. There's Latu Latu from UCLA, who everyone loves, but he has a lot of health issues, and I don't know if he's like going to be the perfect fit here in Washington. He's another edge. Offensive tackles. Ben, you've seen this. So you saw Dane's most recent mock, right?
I believe I did.
Okay. I think he had 8 offensive tackles in the 1st round. I've heard a lot of discussion. Offensive tackles, there's a great group at the top, and then it kind of thins out. Now, you have a name in your mock, which I won't bring up, which is a good name to think about in the future. If they move up, sort of like in that 18th pick range, they could get Amarius Mims from Georgia. Did you see Amarius Mims's measurables at the draft?
They were rather impressive.
6'8", 340, 36 and an eighth arm length, 11 and a quarter hands. 11 and a quarter. That so
we
is
need,
like...
We need to see his hands against Kenny Pickett's.
Kenny Pickett's hands would disappear into the void of Amarius Mims's hands. It's like the comparison for Maryland and Virginia DMV area people, like a regular lacrosse head versus a goalie, the head of a goalie stick. It's like that is a massive hand. Why does that matter for offensive linemen? Because strong hands, you know, control the block, all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. Other names, Jackson Powers Johnson, interior lineman, Oregon. Terrion Arnold, cornerback, Alabama. And weapon, Brock Bowers could be, who knows where Brock Bowers is going to go. This Elijah Vera Tucker scenario, why the Jets did it was because they love Tucker. They thought that he was a no-brainer at the time when they could get him. They gave up a decent amount of draft capital to go up and get him. What I would love, this is the scenario I love the most. Take the quarterback at number 2 and then be aggressive in trying to attack the tiers of the draft. If you start seeing names come off the board that you love at tackle, at edge, at cornerback, that you think are a widely different tier than the next tier down. Like again, for pass rushers, if you think Dallas Turner is at a tier by himself, Dallas Turner is the perfect fit in a Dan Quinn defense. He's Micah Parsons E, right? Like he's extremely athletic, 6'3", 250, 4'4", all that stuff. He's not quite big to be a traditional D end, neither is Micah Parsons. If you see him starting to fall, if you see Brock Bowers starting to fall, or a tackle you think is in a top tier, I would want this team to be aggressive. And I think they would be because the San Francisco Giants, the 49ers with Adam Peters were very aggressive in making trades on draft day and around draft day. So I would just, that would be where I would put my energy.
So
What was the trade? So the trade would be Commanders trade their first second round pick. I think it's the fourth overall in the second round.
Yep.
They trade a third round pick and they trade a fourth for a first and a fifth.
Okay. Well, so, okay. I think I found your trade partner. I'm just looking here. I'm using the, just to give them a shout out, drafttech.com has one of these Jimmy Johnson trade charts I'm looking at.
Oh, sick.
All right. The Miami Dolphins have the 21st pick.
Perfect.
They have a second round pick. They have no picks in the third and the fourth. Obviously, you know, they're a contender in the AFC to some degree at least. So and if you look at the numbers on the trade chart, and these things are, I don't think teams use this trade chart like religiously, because obviously if they did, everybody would know, but there would be no bad trade. They would just be straight up. So, but just as a guide to a degree, the cost of the 21st pick is essentially dead equal to the cost of the number 36 pick and the Washington's third round pick 67. So if you wanted to give the sweetener, what you're talking about, something else down
maybe
the line.
Maybe the sweetener's a fifth round pick then, you know, if we're really right. Haggling. Yeah, maybe.
So, and to your point, if they traded the fourth for a fifth, Washington's fourth round pick is number 103. The Dolphins' fifth round pick is 157. So you're dropping down 54 slots, and Miami moves up. So Miami gets more picks, and then they lose the fifth year option, not to mention whoever they could take there, and then they move down. First of all, appreciate the energy and the thought. You know, people make fun of us mock drafters at times. You know, live a little, have some fun. I know none of these things will ever happen, but the point is,
we're watching this thing. We're spending 3 days of our lives watching this thing. Let's have fun before it.
I agree. Plus, like the people who like look down at the mock drafts and thus the fake trades as well. The issue I have with them is like you can't, if you're going to talk about this team when it comes to what they should do in the offseason, you have to look at the entire picture. Like as part of the exercise of that I did for the story that I had up today on Wednesday about more sort of takeaways and insights after the combine was about Sam Howell. Like I'm in the camp that says they should probably look to get a vet and then in turn see what's the value for a Sam Howell trade. But before you do that, well, what does the market look like? And I thought last year they had pretty good opportunities to get that veteran, which obviously they did with Jacoby Brissett. I don't know if it's as rich this year if you play out the game, looking at what teams would want. So therefore, you have to ask this question. This has nothing to do with this. My point is just to say, if you don't do some of these exercises, you're looking at half the story. And it's easy to say, well, just do X. Well, what does that actually mean? So what we're doing here is, right, we're going through the exercise. What would it take to do this? Now, I will say this. So the question would be, for fun, if we did this trade, is it pass rusher? Is it offensive tackle or whatever? I don't want to even focus on the individual player because that can get confusing. I do kind of think pass rusher would be where I would go, in part because, like you said before, it seems like the pass rushers may dry up pretty quickly and may not even make it to the top of day two, because guys like Chop Robinson at Penn State and Darius Robinson at Missouri, you know, guys are starting to get more momentum, had really good combines, all that kind of stuff. Whereas offensive linemen, you mentioned how many Dane tackles had he in the first round. Like, I think he has 13 offensive linemen in his top 50 or something like that. Like, there will be some offensive linemen there at 40 that is going to be viewed as pretty good. So I would probably roll that dice and take one of these defensive ends, pick your choice, I guess, but like, as opposed to another position.
And as a team building thing, I'd rather spend money on offensive tackle and go veteran offensive tackles to protect my rookie quarterback and go young at D end. Like, just, you know, I'd love veterans across both ends. And I wish Montez Sweat, love the pick, but I wish Montez Sweat was still here. It'd make the team building exercise a little stronger. But, you know, like, to put a rookie quarterback out there with a potential rookie left tackle and a potential rookie right tackle, and, you know, there's a lot of youth on an offense and probably too much, like, also to go with the team building. Like, I would pair Drake May or Jane Daniels up with a veteran center, because that's going to matter, right? You need to do that. And it can't be, who was the guy they picked from Arkansas last
Ricky
year?
Ricky Stromberg.
Can't be Mr. Stromberg.
And by the way, like, obviously, in fairness to them, it's not like they could have predicted last year how bad things would be, that they would be getting the second pick. But you're 100% right. Like, so, you know, it's like when they drafted Stromberg last year, who, you know, looks like a fine player. Obviously, he didn't play much as a rookie. But they did it after signing Nick Gates. And at left guard, they were going with Sadiq Charles and Chris Paul, which obviously didn't really work out. We all could see that was most likely not going to work out. So why would you not pick a player at a position that you didn't just – like, that's the stuff that drove me crazy about that group. I don't ever know what the plan was, and nothing seemed to be cohesive, and I am excited to see what this group does because, you know, the individual talent of the players is one thing, but it's how does it all flow together? Because you're right. If they have to now go get a veteran center, meaning Stromberg is now sitting here and I don't know what he is, that's even more of a potential waste of a third-round pick, depending on what happens. So I'm with you. This is how you have to view this whole board.
And I will say, just for fun, right? Like, so we're saying the Dolphins at 21. Here's who Dane has from 19 to 24. 19, Jared Verse. 20 is Jackson Powers Johnson. This is from the mock draft, not his big board. 21, which is the Dolphins pick, Troy Fontenot, which is the guard tackle from Washington that a lot of people like. Mm-hmm. Nate Wiggins at 22, which, God, if they have Nate Wiggins, a sub-175 cornerback with Emmanuel Forbes, I will lose my mind. Like, I know that's not why Forbes did poorly, but
it would be fun, though, to see, like, the seesaw with Forbes and Wiggins on one side and, like, I don't know, pick your, like, a Deron Payne on the other.
Yeah. Right, exactly. It's like they could – it's those two together equal – who's the defensive tackle from Texas? Not Murphy.
Devontae Sweat.
Yeah. They should draft him. And then Latu, who's the edge, really productive again, 23 overall, who would go to the Texans. Like Cooper DeJean at 25. I know we talked about tackles versus rush, and I agree. I think that's the priority. Like part of my issue with the Ron Rivera regime is that like – you know, we talk about the Darrisaw Jamin Davis pick, just in a vacuum, value of having an offensive tackle versus a linebacker, it's just a massive difference in value. And so Cooper DeJean, who may just end up being a safety, may not be super valuable, but Cooper DeJean is like a Ravens pick, and I mean that in the best possible. It's like Kyle Hamilton, talent falls to them. Who's their center from Linderbaum from Iowa? Talent, they attack talent. Doesn't matter what position. Cooper DeJean's kind of like that guy. But yeah, I think that's the scenario. If I was the Commanders, I would really investigate. And how I would do it is say, okay, who are the teams that are looking to trade back? The Dolphins are a great example because they don't have many picks in this upcoming draft. And they also have like cap issues. So like they need help in terms of getting cheap talent. And okay, what does it take? And who's the player that the Commanders would be excited about grabbing there? Like who, what is the name? Where we saw this on the other side of it, when the Saints traded for Chris Olave, it's because they really wanted him. And Olave is just a better player than Jahan Dotson right now. So anyways, that's the other trade I super duper like to talk about. I have one more.
Go for it.
Do you want it? Okay. It's, if you've understood the tiers that we're going for, it's the super high end pick. You have to give up a lot. It's the mid-range first rounder. You have to give up something, but it's a little more balanced. And this one is simply just taking advantage of the end of the first round and that fifth-year option. And this is, if at the end of the first, it's called the Jermaine Johnson. I didn't intend for it to be another Jets pick, but that's just sort of, they were very active in the trade market during the draft season. The Jets moved up.
And by the way, just to spoil this, the Jermaine Johnson, very happy for me. Because I had Jermaine Johnson in that draft in my final mock draft going to the Jets earlier when they had earlier picks, didn't happen. But then when they traded back in, you get credit in the mock draft for matching up the player to the team. So I actually got credit for that one, even though it was later. So I was pretty happy with that. So it gives me smiles.
Was this the, because you're a multi-time champion mock drafter.
I don't.
You should get extra points for that. I mean, that's not like a.
Right. I don't think I won that one.
Are you adjusting your trophies?
I was pulling out the trophy. This was a different year. It's all I have. I have one trophy. Somebody gave it to me for winning the 2019 mock draft. Yeah, very exciting. It's the only thing I have on my shelf.
That's awesome. Oh, I mean, that'd be the proudest thing of my life if I had nailed a mock draft. It's the hardest. It's like when Jason Wirth said that hitting a baseball is the hardest thing you can do. Honestly, nailing a mock draft is harder than that. It's way harder. The percentage to hit is way lower. Okay, last one is the Jermaine Johnson. It's simply that when the Jets went up for 20 to go to 26 overall, they gave up an early second round pick, a third round pick, and a fifth round pick to the Titans to move up to 26 overall, and they got a late third. And why I would do this is for that fifth year option. If a player's picked in the first round, the team has a fifth year option. Technically, the Commanders also have that for Jamin Davis, though it's hard to imagine that they will do that. Why I would do this, if there's an edge that they like Chop Robinson, who they think is a different tier, or a tackle that they really like at a high value position where having that extra year of controllability matters. Typically, we think of that as quarterback, like teams usually trade into the end of the first round to grab the quarterback. Here for the Commanders, I think really there's only two positions that you need that extra fifth year, unless if you think wide receiver and you just, but I don't think the Commanders are going to spend capital to go get a wide receiver. So tackle Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, Jordan Morgan from Arizona. What's the kid from BYU's name? Do you know?
Kingsley, I don't know how to say the last name. I don't know.
Suatama?
Yeah, sure.
Sutiama?
Yeah, I don't want to butcher it,
Or Chop Robinson, edge from, is he from Greenberg? Or Greenbelt, excuse me? He's from Maryland, Chop. I know he went to Penn State, but,
I think that's right.
or Gaithersburg, or one of the Bergs. But anyways, I would love that because I think there are tiers in drafts, and I'm a proponent of, I know you should have as many dart throws as you can get, but if you are believing in your scouting, and Adam Peters is allegedly one of the best scouts in football, you should attack that type of position. So that's the final Jermaine Johnson pick. And I think I'd be very excited if they came out of the first day of the draft having a quarterback and a pass rusher. Wow. A plus, Ben. Look at that.
Look at that.
Commanders are back.
I like that. I have a similar one now. As I said, gonna have a mock draft up, I think, on Thursday. Commanders only. I don't have any trades currently in it because I haven't done this exercise yet, just for what they have and just kind of want to play it. But like this, have thought of stuff. Here's one that I have currently that we'll see if I include or not. It's as a combination of moving up and getting more picks. Okay, why? I think I mentioned San Francisco has like a dozen picks. And obviously, we know that Adam Peters might know a couple people over there. So in this case, Washington trades up into the first round for San Fran's 31st pick, which would the idea would be somewhere that we just discussed, if in my head, getting one of those pass rushers. But sure, if you have somebody else in mind, so be it. So that Washington would trade 36, their first second round pick, and 101, which is the last pick in the third round.
The comp pick that they got for Chase Young.
To San Francisco for 31. So again, you're getting the fifth year option as well. 31, 132. So you're getting a later pick. So now you're getting that fourth round pick instead of that end of the third. But then also you're getting picks 214 and 249. Again,
Whew.
San Fran has a ton of picks.
Love it.
I've not done San Francisco's math. I'm sure they are losing guys in free agency, but they don't probably need all the picks because they already have a roster of of a team that's pretty good. Whereas for Washington, as we've discussed, they need a lot of dart throws. And even though this is considered to be a fairly weak day three class because a lot of guys stayed in college for NIL or whatever, this is Adam Peters' wheelhouse. I'm not even talking about Brock Purdy. I'm just saying in general, this is where Adam Peters is known to be stalwart. Day three, finding these diamonds in the rough. So I'd give him more opportunities. And again, this all comes down to the San Francisco value picking at the end of the third versus picking 30 odd picks later in the fourth. Not to mention maybe they don't, I don't know, for whatever reason, they don't want first, because the first round, first round salary is gonna be higher as well. So maybe if their cap situation is what it is, maybe they prefer a lower salary to boot. So that's what I was sort of toying with.
Yeah, and I what so and you still think it would be like, do you think, just, I know we have to go soon, but do you think this management staff, Peters, et cetera, are going to lean on positional value more than the Ron Rivera regime, who really didn't seem to care about positional value, as evidence of taking like Jamin Davis in the first round and things like that. And not never taking an offensive tackle or in the first round or whatever. Like, do you think, because again, like that will tell us like, okay, they will want to take a tackle or D end in that first round.
So I guess my thing is, I don't know about what Rivera and them cared about positional value. I just don't think they seem to be very nimble with opportunities. They seem to get themselves locked in. Like the year that they took Jamin Davis, like in the last, I always do these bits, like three or four or five or six different paths you could take. The first one is always my standard one. And I was on Jamin Davis that year pretty quickly. Like he was the only player that draft I interviewed on this podcast. I'm not saying I'm getting 20 of them in general. I just like, I wanted to see about if I could get him. Because once you started hearing that he was a guy that could be in that range, I was locked in that Ron Rivera wanted a linebacker after going through the first year and they didn't have one. He is a linebacker himself, all that stuff. So I just felt like they, and like even last year with Forbes, like several days before the draft, I started hearing Forbes, watch out for Forbes, even though he wasn't being mocked into that general range. And obviously, and
even though Christian Gonzalez was fell to the Commanders,
right?
It felt like the Commanders leadership, like you're saying, just they lock in on something. And that's kind of what happens.
Right. So to me, I don't know what Peters is thinking in terms of positional value, but I would like to assume that he is going to be more nimble minded and flexible and be willing to say, oh, okay, we can figure this out. By the way, did you see, you probably didn't because you have a life to live. I tweeted this yesterday. Somebody passed around a clip on Twitter. It was a very old school, Howard Cosell old school. It's Howard Cosell, the guy, Ed Sable, who started NFL Films, and Jack Whitaker, who, for those of you who are, you know, under 50, venerable, longtime sports announcer in your Vern Lundquist-y, view. Anyway, or you know, some Mike Tirico or whomever. Anyway, and they're having a conversation, and this clip was about the NFL draft, and Howard Cosell was saying, again, this is like in the 70s. He's like, it's preposterous that they got to have 15 minutes in between picks. They spend all this time, all this money. He even mentions computers. I don't know what they were using back then, but all this time, all this energy, all these resources to figure out what they want to do. And then when somebody makes a pick in front of them, suddenly they have to scramble for 15 minutes to figure out what it is that they need to do. And he's not wrong about that, because you should have multiple options available to you. You should be able to say, well, this is what we're going to do. You know, by the way, I hate to pick on like Scott McLuhan, but the reason they ended up with Josh Dotson that one year is he wanted to take Ryan Kelly, the center that the Colts took. That pick was, I think, the pick right before them or two picks before them. They didn't know what to do. They traded down one pick with Houston, who then took a receiver. And then they just took Dotson because they didn't really seem to know what else to do. And they kind of admitted, you know, later that they didn't do enough homework probably on Dotson, the person, because that was the issue ultimately, right? That he just didn't seem to be that into football. You got to be able to think about these things in advance. And, you know, hopefully Peters and that crew will be able to do that.
Well, this is going to go off the rails for a second, but I'll bring it right back. There was this revolution in hold'em poker of like the moneymaker types who came in, who played virtual online poker, and what made them unique was that they could play like multiple hands constantly for hours and hours and hours. So they saw billions of scenarios,
right?
Not billions, millions, right? And so all the old head poker were like, oh, we're getting, you know, like, oh, that's my old head poker impression. Adam Peters should be on like, you know, like PFF doing mock drafts constantly. That's all he should be doing. You know, I don't know if you saw Dune, but like what happened, again, this is going to go off the rails, but I'll get it back. In the world of Dune, you know, this is 8,000 years into the future. They've banned AI in most computers because they got out of hand. So people have evolved their brains to be able to do interstellar travel using spice as the drug that they expand their mind. Adam Peters should be doing some spice to expand his mind, because we need him in that moment to be ready to roll and go like post the second pick, because they should know who they're taking number two overall, like before the draft. But in those moments when there's that value, like, again, this is what the Ravens have done for years. When there's value, you attack the value in the draft. And I know things move quickly, but like, unfortunately, again, the old administration didn't move so quickly, or they seem to be concerned about the unpredictability of the draft and were more concerned with like getting their guy. And they didn't do all bad stuff. I'm just saying there's a lot of opportunity that was left on the cutting room floor. And I'm hoping Adam Peters does some spice before the draft to expand his mind and to attack it like Paul Atreides did the Harkonnens on Arrakis. Ben, I know you're a huge Dune guy.
You know, it's funny. Well, I'm going to ask you about Dune off air. Look, I love going to the movies. There's just not many I like, but people seem to be telling me that Dune's pretty good. I didn't see the first one either, but people seem to be suggesting this is good. And obviously there's like some, like all the Avengers movies, not for me. That just seems too, you know, I'm all in for adventure stuff, but just not all that. Anyway, I'll ask you about that later. All right. He's at Mike Smelt on Twitter. I'm just looking at Mike's Twitter follow. Look, he's more of a LinkedIn guy, as we know, but yeah. He's got 774 followers. Can we get that to 800 by the time Mike is back up here?
Honestly, if you guys get it up to a million. I will give everyone, actually, I will give no one anything, but I will donate $5 to charity. If I get a million followers on Twitter, $5 will go to charity.
Look, a million.
Of your choice, Ben.
Yeah. Oh, I don't even have, that I'd like to get a little more, but yeah, we're just trying to get Mike to 800. If we can do that, we'll start there, and then we'll get to a million. My guy, I appreciate the thought, you know, we'll have plenty more to discuss. Obviously, I'm sure we'll have you back on once they actually get some new players and grade them accordingly. Thanks, man.
Yep, go Drake May.
All right, many thanks to Ted Wynn and Mike Smelt for their time. Thanks to everyone here for, of course, checking out the podcast. You know, be locked into everything that's going on here because it is about to get super duper busy. As we know, free agency next week, more draft talk, and all these things kind of, you know, blend together. What they do in free agency is going to affect the draft and so on. So this is the fun part for, I think this is the fun part. Obviously the games are great, but there has been a lot of fun in the games the past few years. By the way, speaking of all that, while I was doing this, Ron Rivera, it turns out, was apparently guest on ESPN today as an analyst. I haven't had a chance to watch the clip, so I don't quite know what the deal was. And I haven't heard that he was hired by them, but you know, they have people come in studio and Ron Rivera trying out to be Ron Rivera becoming a TV analyst. Certainly made a ton of sense. I think he could be pretty good, especially if they can limit it to like film work and his view on that. I've said before, when we would talk to him on the side, he was really good at breaking down plays. So if that's what his job is going to be, I think that could be a good fit for sure. We'll see what happens over time. Speaking of time, I'm out of it now. That's it for me, Ben Standick, signing off. Until next time.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.